Well, thanks, Liz, for leading us in prayer. I'm always a little jealous of people who can take really good photographs. I've got a friend in Manchester who all this week has been posting photos from a riverside walk that I used to do really often and I know really well. And every photo that he's posted is stunning. They're clear and they're beautifully framed and they just pop. And I've never really been very good with a camera. If I take a good photo occasionally, it's more the law of averages than anything else. But I've got a couple of pictures at home that I took a few years ago. The three of us were in London for a day trip and we were on the London Eye. And it was a glorious day and the views across London were absolutely spectacular. And I love being up high and being able to see for miles and miles. So I was enjoying every moment of being on the wheel. And so while we were at the top, I got my phone out, as you would, and I took a few photos to immortalise the occasion. And on a day like that, a view like that, how can you fail to get a beautiful photograph, right? So when I got home, I put the pictures on my monitor screen so that I could enjoy them at their best. And here's what happened. There must have been a mark or a scuff or something on the glass of the capsule we were riding in. And the focus on my camera is automatic because it's idiot-proof. And somehow the camera lens latched onto that scuff on the glass and adjusted its focus to that. And so I've got this beautifully crisp, sharp photograph of a smear on the glass 135 metres above the River Thames, with the vista of the whole of London beneath me reduced to an out-of-focus smudge on the background. Have you ever noticed how easily a little tiny thing can steal your focus and prevent you from seeing the big picture? Today we're starting off a new series in the book of Hebrews, which is towards the back of the New Testament. And Hebrews is a sermon, actually. If you think my sermons are long, you should read that one through. And it's written to a group of Christians, and we don't know exactly who they were, but what we do know is that those Christians were going through some tough times. They were coming under pressure. Their faith was being squeezed. And for some of them, what they were experiencing was causing their faith to kind of start to unravel. What they were going through was tough enough that it was making them question things that previously they'd been sure of. Their circumstances were stealing their focus and blurring the big picture for them. And so the book of Hebrews is written to Christians who are in danger of having their focus stolen away. And it's written to enable them to bring the big picture back into focus. And if I could boil the whole book down into just one sentence, it would be this. Don't look at Jesus through the lens of your circumstances. Look at your circumstances through the lens of Jesus. In Hebrews 2, it says, "We see Jesus, now crowned with glory and honour." That's where he is. He's ascended and exalted and crowned with glory and honour. That's Jesus. The problem comes when we let our circumstances come between us and him. And so we get unwell. And we hold it here and we look at Jesus through that and he looks smaller. Or we get scared. And let's be honest, if you're in the middle of all this COVID-19 stuff and you're not even a tiny bit scared, you just might want to get your head checked because it's scary. But we get scared and we look at Jesus through that thing that scared us and he looks smaller. Or following Jesus becomes demanding because there is a cost to following him. I mean, you can be a supporter of Jesus at no cost at all. You can agree that he's a jolly good chap who said some stuff that was thought-provoking. But that's not being a Christian. Being a Christian is following When Jesus called the fishermen, Peter and Andrew, to follow him, the Bible says that they left their nets to follow him. And there was a cost to that. In those nets was their security and their livelihood and their identity and the comfort of the familiar. And I know some of us are a little sick and tired of the comfort of the familiar at the moment during lockdown, but you understand what I mean. I'm not saying that following Jesus will necessarily mean leaving all of these things behind. But there will come a time, there will always come a time when to follow him the next step means that there's a net you have to let go of. And sometimes we look at Jesus through that net and he seems a bit smaller. Don't look at Jesus through the lens of your circumstances, because circumstances are temporary and Jesus is eternal. Look at your circumstances through the lens of Jesus. So let's look at how Hebrews first describes Jesus, and Jenny Pierce is going to read the first few verses of Hebrews chapter 1.
Good morning, everyone. The reading this morning is taken from the book of Hebrews, chapter 1, verses 1 to 4. In the past, God spoke to our forefathers through the prophets at many times and in various ways. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things and through whom he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. After he had provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the Majesty in heaven. So he became as much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs. Thanks be to God.
It's worth us pausing as we get into this to notice where the initiative is in that first sentence. In the past, it says, God spoke. And you know, there are three kinds of people in life. There are people who call back or who message you, but only when you message them first. And we've all got friends like that. And they are friends, but you do all the legwork. And they start every reply with, "Oh, that's funny, I was just thinking about you." And then there are people who don't call or message back, even when you do message them first. And we've probably all got a friend or two like that as well. But then there are people who make the first move. There are people who reach out, people who pick up the phone because they want to know how you are. And those people are a blessing, aren't they? God is an initiative taker. He doesn't wait for us to go looking for him before he comes looking for us. He doesn't wait for you to pray before he speaks. The problem is, sometimes we wait for us to pray before we listen, but that's a different issue. God reaches out. He takes the initiative. He speaks. God makes himself known. And in the past, it says he did that through the prophets. He did it through people who spoke on his behalf. But now God has rewritten all the rules. Now God has done something even better, because now he has spoken through his Son. And of course, that's Jesus. Hebrews doesn't actually say so until part of the way through the next chapter, so by all means read ahead and check up on me, but it is Jesus that it's talking about. God has shown himself through his Son, Jesus. And most of the book of Hebrews is a detailed explanation of how Jesus is better, how he's greater than anything that had gone before, or anything that they might have been tempted to replace him with. And in these four verses are a prelude to all of that. The author introduces Jesus with these beautiful statements about who he is. The first is that it was Jesus through whom God made the universe. And I've got to be honest, when somebody first said this to me after I became a Christian, it slightly blew my mind. I had to rewind and rethink a whole lot of stuff that I thought I knew. I became a Christian in 1986, and I thought that Jesus had just celebrated his 1985th birthday that previous Christmas. But the Son of God didn't pop into being at Christmas, or even 9 months before Christmas. That's just when he became human. And we're going to think about that a lot more next week. But the Son of God is eternal. He was always there. He was involved in the creation of the universe and everything in it. And in the next verse, it tells us that he sustains all things by his powerful word. Jesus does that. Now, obviously, I'm very aware that not everybody in the world believes what I believe, and I respect everybody's right to believe whatever they believe. I might respectfully disagree, but I respect what it is they believe. But just occasionally, you hear people say things about the Bible that, with the best will in the world, you have to say, that's just nonsense. One of the craziest is this. I've heard people say, the Bible doesn't actually say that Jesus is God. I think he was just a Jewish philosopher who, you know, went viral. But right here in black and white is Jesus creating the universe and then sustaining it by the power of his word. That's not a job that God subcontracts. This is Jesus, who is God, doing God stuff because he's God. He was always there. He's eternal and all-powerful. The second thing that this passage tells us about Jesus is that the Son is the radiance of God's glory. Now, this is to do with the presence of God. And we know that God is always everywhere, all of the time. There's nowhere you can go to run away or to hide from God. There's nowhere that's out of his sight. But there are times and places that he seems to be particularly present, when his presence is tangible. And we sometimes get a small taste of that presence. There are times when you're worshipping or praying and there's such a sense of God in the room. It's hard to describe, but you just know that he's there. And that presence of God was something that God's people treasured in the Old Testament. And sometimes it had a physical manifestation. When God led his people through the desert, his presence appeared before them as a pillar of cloud in the daytime and as a pillar of fire in the night. And right in the middle of that whole adventure, Moses had a conversation with God. It's in Exodus 33, if you want to look it up. And Moses said, if your presence doesn't go with us, don't let us go from here. It's like he was saying, if your presence isn't coming, I ain't going. I don't want to be away from your presence. But God's glory is something more. God's glory is the presence of God turned up to 11. God's glory is the unrestrained presence of God. When a welder is using an arc welding gun, she has to wear a special face mask because the flash of the arc is so bright that it would burn her retina and could potentially leave her blind. The glory of God is the presence of God with the welding helmet taken away. And Moses was so accustomed to the presence of God that he couldn't even imagine being without it. But even Moses had never seen the glory of God. And we know that because just 3 verses after what I read to you a moment ago, Moses actually says to God, please, would you let me see your glory? And God said no, because it would kill him. It would be too bright. It would be too powerful. It would be too overwhelming, too intense. That's the glory of God. In 1 Timothy, it says God lives in unapproachable light. That's the glory of God. But remember where we set off on this. Jesus is the light beam of God's glory. If the full force of the presence of God shines like 10,000 suns, Jesus is the brilliance of its shining. Where the presence of God shines as light into dark places, Jesus is its illuminating power. And so are you starting to see that you can't separate Jesus and God? He's the glow of God all around you and in you. In 1 Thessalonians, Paul tells us, we don't belong to the night or to the darkness. And he's not talking about literal night, of course. It's not like you're working night shifts. God is not pleased with you right now. What he's saying is this. Following Jesus is not compatible with having dark corners in our lives where we're not prepared to have the light shine. Because the person that you invited into your heart is the radiance of God's glory. And that light is bright, and it will find out those dark corners. So Jesus is the radiance of God's glory. And then he's the exact representation of his being. And the word that's used here is a very specific one. It's like an imprint. It's actually literally a seal in wax. If you watch Taskmaster on TV, they have this cutaway between scenes that shows a blob of red wax on an envelope, and then the Taskmaster seal is pressed into it, leaving a perfect image of the seal in the wax. And that's the exact meaning of the word here. And the point is this. If you've seen the impression in the wax, you don't need to see the seal because you already know exactly what it looks like. The shape is identical. The pattern is identical. Jesus is the exact representation of who God is. The shape is identical. And Jesus said the same thing himself, didn't he? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father, he said in John chapter 14. And this is so helpful to us because we struggle with the fact that God is invisible. I mean, we don't say that we struggle with it because it doesn't sound like a good Christian thing to say. But if you've been a Christian for any time at all, I pretty much guarantee that you've had a moment when you thought, why can't God just appear and settle it? And wouldn't that be so much easier? He could answer all my questions about what he thinks about this matter and how he reacts to that thing. And it would be a real poke in the eye for people who say that he doesn't exist, and I'd quite enjoy that. Why can't God just appear? But he already did. The Son is the exact representation of God's being. He's the imprint in the wax. He's the same. So if you're wondering, what's God like? Is he kind or is he harsh? Look at what Jesus was like, because he's the exact representation. If you're wondering, is God distant or is he warm? Look at what Jesus was like, because he's the exact representation. If you're wondering, will God be quick to forgive or does he keep a long list of everything I've done wrong? Look at what Jesus was like, because he's the exact representation. If you're wondering, will God accept me or does he push people like me away? Look at what Jesus was like, because he's the exact representation. You get the idea. Jesus makes the invisible God visible. And there may be other prophets or teachers who can tell you a bit about God, but only Jesus can say, see for yourself. And that's what you need when you're going through tough times. That's what your spirit is crying out for when circumstances shake your faith. Don't let a small thing steal your focus and prevent you from seeing the big picture. Don't look at Jesus through the lens of your circumstances. Look at your circumstances through the lens of Jesus, because he truly is greater. hence the name of this series. He truly is greater than anything else. He's the eternal Son of God, who played his own part in the creation of the universe. He's the radiance of God's glory, who brings his light and warmth and presence into every dark corner. And he's the exact representation of God's being, showing us who God is and what God's like. And that's why we worship him. Astrid's going to lead us in prayer, and then we're going to worship together.